Hi, it's Tim Flanagan again with another episode of Winning Through Culture. I am super excited today to be with an outstanding human being, Steve Krasnopol. Steve is a wonderful father, husband, friend, and financial services professional. Steve is the founder of Wealth Coach of North Carolina. Prior to founding Wealth Coach in North Carolina, he received his bachelor's degree in political science from the University of South Florida. He decided to pursue a career in financial planning as a way to help people achieve their most important financial goals and protect those goals. Through the College of Financial Planning in Denver, Colorado, Steve became a certified financial planner. Through his dedication to charitable organizations and supporting the community that he lives in, he decided to pursue his professional education further through the American College and received the designation of Chartered Advisor in Philanthropy. He is also a chartered special needs planning consultant working with special needs families, and he has since completed his certified family business specialist professional designation, working with closely held family businesses on a variety of issues. Steve is actually originally from South Florida, but he and his family moved to Wilmington in 2005. He enjoys guitar, spending time on the beach, as well as the art and history that historic downtown Wilmington has to offer. He's committed to improving his community through his work and in his outside endeavors, and currently sits on the advisory board for the Carousel Center. So, Steve, welcome to the Winning Through Culture podcast.
Good morning, Tim. It's really a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. And again, obviously, through our relationship, I wouldn't normally do a formal introduction, but for the purposes of who you are as a guest on our podcast, I needed to do that. But it was a great reminder, like I said in the beginning, of what a great person you are. I'm really excited to spend some time with you today, Steve, as we have spoken to a number of financial advisors about the things that not only have made them successful, but really driven them to serve their clients and communities as you are doing so well. I know I shared a little bit about your background, but I always like to give you an opportunity to share how you got started in the career and ultimately what led you to choose an advice-based business model, the one that you operate in today?
So there's two very large segments to that question. One being, how did I get into the industry? And the other, how did we transition to advice model?
Yeah.
So if I was to
one at a time.
Yeah. Okay. So if I was to summarize, I mean, how I got in is, I think it's not the normal path. I got out of college. In all candor, I did not have a lot of background or education in financial planning. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do when I got out of college. I actually had come home and started working for my family business, which was a carpet installation company. And through that, a few things I learned. One was that I was not cut out to run a carpet installation company. But I also learned that I was very interested in my family's business dynamic. I've always said I was very proud of my father, still am, who started out as a carpet installer and then eventually grew into his own carpet installation company and did quite well with it. I used to say, I'm always so proud of you. And he always used to say, I wish I could have gone so much farther. And I realized what was happening was he was always a carpet installer that owned a business. He never had the background to be a businessman that chose that as his professed chosen occupation. And so it interested me, how does a person who runs a business learn how to plan for that business and learn how to do the things that we do for business owners? And so it interested me. So I was thinking about that. And then one day, oddly, my mother, who worked for a coffee company at the time, both my parents were blue collar, she was doing a coffee delivery to a stock brokerage office in Boca Raton, Florida, and came back and said, hey, I knew you had an interest in this. I got you an interview. So next thing you know, I'm getting off my knees on a carpet company and I'm getting an interview with a stock brokerage firm. And suddenly I'm getting sponsored for my Series 7. And that's how I started in the industry. Really working as a stockbroker, which very quickly I learned that that was not really my great point of interest. And step by step, I learned more about the industry until I finally understood that I wanted to be not just in financial services, but early on focused on the protection side of it. So I started with an insurance company, but always with the idea of doing insurance planning and investment planning. And what led me to, I guess I would call it an advice-driven model, was a few things. Again, there was a lot of coaching involved. And frankly, this goes over years. And a lot of this coaching has come through you and from others in our industry. But early on, what helped me make that decision was two things. One was, frankly, I was very frustrated that our entire industry and model was based around the fact of me only being able to assist a client and being profitable in a client relationship if I sold them a product. And sometimes you can go down a very detailed path of trying to do that and it just wouldn't work out. And you put a lot of energy and effort and expertise into a strategy and then you don't get compensated. And I felt that that was not going to be the way for my success over the long term. And then couple that with the fact that what I learned through study was that clients are much more apt to actually respect your time, respect your expertise, and actually take and implement your ideas if they are compensating you for your expertise. So those things kind of came together as a confluence. And I said, you know, if I'm charging, I can give them good advice. I can get compensated for my expertise. And then what comes out of that will oftentimes be the implementation of strategies, investments in insurance, and it'll work best for all parties.
That's a great, again, reference point to, I'll say, the historical nature of the profession, which is commission-based sales. And your transition to, as we said in the introduction, really furthering your education so you can be a person that can give great advice to clients and get compensated for that advice independent of the outcome of the product side of things. I think that's a really important point to note that people do are apt to pay for advice and listen to it as a result of that versus just trying to be sold something. So you've had a lot of success in business and focus of this podcast, Winning Through Culture, is about culture. And one of the key things about culture is core values. I'd love it, Steve, if you would talk a little bit about the core values that have driven you in your business life. And I know that you're not compartmentalized in your life, but certainly from a business personal perspective.
I would say, well, ultimately, I mean, there are basic core values that I try and adhere to: honesty, integrity, transparency. And these are things that I just, like you said, it goes on both sides, personal and professional. I'm married for 27 years. I've got two children. I always want to be able to come home at night and be able to look them in the eye and know that I tried to be a good person and tried to do the right thing. And so those are some core basics of the way I try and run my life. Certainly, I've lived a long time. I'm not an angel. It hasn't been perfect, but we've done our best to be good people and really have those around me be proud of the work that I've done. And so how that translates into the business life, I'm going to say this, it's easy in our industry to not be integrous, to not be honest, to be driven by compensation first. Our industry is highly regulated because of a lot of that. What drives me is that we hold people's future in their hands. If we do the job right, somebody's retiring comfortably. If we do the job right and something, God forbid, happens to one of our clients, their family is protected. Their income is protected. They can still strive to reach their goals. But the flip side of that, if we don't do our job right, those things can all come crashing down and it falls on us also. So I've tried to go by the basic tenet that it's just that important to do the job right for our clients because literally their financial and sometimes health-related futures are in our hands. And we have to be driven by that as the largest, the most important focus that we have. And anytime that something creeps in that can cause you to look at something and say from a monetary fashion, where that is the driving factor, you know, you have to take a step back and say, what's most important here? The income we're going to earn, what we're putting in place for this family, and that has to drive the answer. And by the way, I've discovered over the years that if we constantly always put that client need up front, we will be duly and appropriately compensated, and it all works out in the end.
Yeah, do the right thing.
It's simple as that. Just do the right thing.
Yeah.
Be treated as you'd want to be treated.
Yep. As you've built your business, how has culture played a role in the evolution of your practice and your team?
So that has come, and I've had the benefit of having two practices, one in South Florida that I sold before I moved to North Carolina, and then the practice that I developed with MassMutual Carolinas when we got here in 2005 with you. So I guess I'd like to focus for the moment on that culture experience. Not that I had a negative experience prior to that, but it's been a long time that we've been working on culture together. And so, frankly, I've, to an extent, leaned on the culture of MassMutual Carolinas because that has allowed me, you know, sometimes it's, I'm not the greatest author in the world. So although I, in my heart, I know how culture runs within my firm, I may not be the best person at writing it or expressing it or having that written mission statement that fits. And frankly, part of the reason that I joined MassMutual Carolinas in the first place had to do with what I understood as a quality culture. And that culture breeds through everything that we do. It is expressed to various, all the advisors in our firm. There are certain things that we would expect, again, wanting to be treated as we would treat others, to our clients, to other professionals within our firm. So what has happened is through that culture, I've been able to hold my head high, know that wherever I go, whatever I'm doing, I'm not just been taught and expressing a certain level of culture, but also am backed by that culture appropriately. And what I mean by that is there's been numerous times over the years that our culture has been tested locally and globally and in Charlotte. And in just about every case that I can think of, culture has won. Culture has stood out. The people that I surround myself with have said, we're going to make sure we do the right thing, even if it's due to our own personal cost or pain. That's allowed me to also implement that level of culture through my firm and through the people that I work with. And I can honestly look at them and say, I do this, the people around us do this, and this is just how we run our business. We always try and do the right thing, put the client first. And that's how you run a business. That's how you sustain yourself in this industry for a long time. That's how the people in compliance respect you and make sure that you're not on their list of problem concerns. So again, it all works out by just trying to do the right thing. And again, I want to thank the MassMutual Carolinas and the culture level they've put forth, because it's helped me to maintain a clear focus on what that culture is and bring it through locally also.
That's great. That's interesting tie-in to, in essence, seeing a positive culture of another organization be a role model and influence for your own, and vice versa. That's a pretty neat relationship. Now, the last 2 years almost have been somewhat disruptive, a little chaotic and crazy, challenging, a lot of different ways you could paint the picture. I'd also say there's been some positive things that obviously happen each and every day, but it's been a time of great adaptation, and you've certainly invested in yourself through your professional education, but I'm curious as to how you've been adapting to stay relevant to your clients even beyond the last couple of years.
Well, I think there's been a few things. Well, first, over the last couple of years, the first adaptation we've had to deal with is the technological adaptation, right? Is to make sure, and this was a big concern of mine. I mean, early on when the pandemic first hit, we couldn't see anybody live. And we thought there'd be a big struggle as to how do we even communicate with our clients? Even if we have the technology, will they have the technology? And thankfully, I guess it was the greatest technological adaptation in global history, is how quickly people went from, I don't know how to use Zoom, to I'm an expert at it. So we found that the first thing we had to do was to be relevant, was to make sure that we could communicate with our clients consistently, to make sure that they understood that we had things under control, that the disruption in the world around us was not going to cause a disruption in our practice and was not going to cause a disruption in our relationship, and we'd be able to function that way. So that was a big adaptation for us. And frankly, now that it has come about that we are having live meetings again, we've now been able to, another adaptation, explain to our clients that they just don't have to do that, that meetings can come in live or be on Zoom, and that's their choice. And we'll be able to be productive and communicative just as functionally either way. So now they have options, which makes it a little easier on us. And frankly, it makes it easier on our calendar, that we can actually have more quality meetings in a day when they're electronically based than when they're live. So that's been a big adaptation for us. We've also adapted our communication models. We mentioned earlier about our advice-driven model. And with that advice-driven model comes a service model. And we want to make sure that when our clients are renewing with us annually, I always say this to them, we're going to work all year long to make sure that's the easiest decision you have to make when that comes around again, through considerable communication, from having a proactive communication model, all of which continues to be adapted and is being adapted as we speak. So I think, again, for a moment, I'll lean back towards MassMutual Carolinas and specifically to my study group, Skull and Bones, that what we have is an incredible think tank. And people are always discussing, how are we ahead of the curve? What are the things that are coming down the pike that we want to be in front of? And a lot of that has to do with technology and has to do with communication and has to do with understanding that, again, even if our model is based on providing offensive planning strategies, investment style for clients, and defensive planning strategies, insurance based for clients, that ultimately all of that comes out of providing objective, independent observations and recommendations and implementation strategies. And so what we're consistently adapting is, how are we best providing that to our clients? How are we best making sure that they are getting the things they need from us, that they're being responsive to our requests, which is frankly a challenge. Sometimes we ask clients for items and it takes them a long time to respond. So how do we adapt that? We're working on that now. How do we make sure that they understand that there are timing concerns? So it's, I would call it more of an evolution than an adaption.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the key theme there that I heard you speak to, Steve, is the reality that you're meeting the client where they are, not necessarily where you want to be. You know, you are a people person. You know, there were several people in the financial services profession that literally when COVID hit decided, I can't see people live. I'm just not going to see them. I'll wait till this thing passes. And you're one of those that adapted to the digital technology, met clients where they are, and are giving them the flexibility of that and continuing, to your point, to evolve to meet the needs of your clients and their desires versus imposing upon them the way you think it should be done. So you're certainly giving them good advice, but you're not telling them how they should consume that. So good for you. Now, you're very passionate in your engagement with your clients, with our organization. You're a big practitioner, you mentioned this earlier, both of transparency and inclusivity. How have you kind of come to see those as important parts of your business, and what value has doing that created in your relationships?
So just to clarify, when you're speaking about transparency and inclusivity, are we talking about the style of client that I work with and different parts of the community?
I think it's ultimately, I think your inquisitive nature of both wanting to know and respect who's on the other side of the table, as we say, and be very transparent in your interactions relationally. But yes, so, it could be a client, it could be a colleague. I just think it's a unique and powerful practice and value you have.
Yeah. Well, and again, I'll answer this question, I think, the way you're answering it. If I'm not walking down that path, please let me know. But when I think about transparency and inclusivity, right now when I hear that word, I'm always thinking of, well, people that are part of the LGBTQ community, people that may not be of the same racial makeup or religious makeup that I come from. So I think early on, there's a few parts to this. First, I'm a person that just very simply believes, as long as you're not doing harm to others, that everybody deserves to live a happy, healthy, and enjoyable life with those around them. And we all have goals, and we should all be able to reach those goals and do it in a manner that makes you happy. And I will also add to that, that I'm also oftentimes attracted to underserved markets. And I do that for a couple of reasons. One is because they really need help. They're not getting the service, if you're in an underserved market, than the traditional larger scale market would. And secondly, behind that is, if in it, as a businessman, if they're not getting the service, if they're not getting that level of professional communication, well, that also opens up opportunity as a businessman to provide them good service, do a good job for them, and to be profitable, which is important as a business person. So I would say, and once again, I'll take this back to family. We raised our family to be inclusive. We raised our family to be transparent. So I want my family to be proud of me and understand that if we're going to support the LGBTQ community, which we certainly do, that that's to be done in a lot of different ways. It's to be done socially with our friends, and it's to be done professionally with those people that need that help. So I have naturally been attracted, and also because we have friends that are part of that community, that has led me for the opportunity to ask for introductions and referrals within that community, and have had many successful relationships and successful client relationships with people that may not be of the same basic, fundamental, religious, social, or racial background of mine. I found it to be highly rewarding. I've also found that people in those various communities are quite appreciative of the fact that they're working with someone that is not necessarily of their same makeup or background, but truly appreciates them and loves them for who they are, and wants to help them reach their goals, which I am very, very focused and committed to doing. And the transparency part of it is that I want people to know me as to who I am. So I'm very comfortable and confident expressing views in that area. I don't necessarily express every view that I have in life. I've learned over the years that sometimes political views, want to be careful and tempered in that. And one of the reasons I mention that is because I also like to work with people that don't have the same political viewpoint as me necessarily. They also deserve to reach their goals. So I want to always be transparent and appropriate and respectful. And yeah, I guess that's really it.
Yeah, well, and I appreciate you sharing that. And the reason I asked the question is I think it's a part of your unique ability, and you're serving a number of different clients well. You're making an impact in the greater Wilmington community there as a result of that. I think you have become a better person and a better professional as a result of that. I've also seen you help other people that might not be as open-minded to open their minds a little bit to the people around them and look at them as people versus some type of categorization in life, which is unfortunately how things have evolved in our society where everybody's labeled. You've done a masterful job of looking at people as people. So I thought, as it relates to the culture of the organization you've created and the culture of the experience you've created for your clients, it definitely is worth noting because I do think it's unique and you do it well. So, you know, kind of speaking to the broader context of your passion for helping clients succeed and supporting them, I mean, have there been any stories you want to share about success with specific, and again, we don't get into specific client names in the podcast for privacy issues, obviously, but just kind of general themes that have caused you to have some breakthroughs in your own thinking and or things you've just been particularly excited to see evolve in a client's life?
Yeah, I have. And listen, I guess ultimately, hopefully every client relationship is a success story at some point. But I think the things that move me the most, the things that have, and again, there's two sides of this. There is the joy of seeing somebody succeed. And then there is the pain of seeing something maybe potentially tragic happen and being there to protect them. And that is a success, although it's a tempered and a sad success.
Mm-hmm. Still a success.
Yeah. And ultimately, I've actually taken a number of clients in the years that I've been in this industry now that we started off years ago with building towards their financial independence when they were not there. And seen them reach that pinnacle and actually transition from working professionals into young, successful retirees, people that maybe have retired earlier in life because we were able to determine that was the case. And now I can watch them enjoy their retirement and look back and say, wow, that's really happening because of the work that we did. They're doing the things they want to do even earlier than they thought because they've learned that they can do so. And I'm working with a client right now who, in the middle of the pandemic, was trying to make a decision as to whether she should retire earlier. And one day she called me and said, what if I wanted to travel the world? And we were putting together numbers and all types of various models. And lo and behold, we concluded that she's able to do this and do it well and do it without risking her financial independence. And lo and behold, when I spoke to her last week, she's meeting with travel agents. They're planning on taking a 3-year nomad lifestyle trip around the world. And that came directly from our conversation. I also have another client right now that I'm working with that I'm very close with that unfortunately is in the middle of experiencing a disabling event that is likely going to cause him to have to step away from work. He's in his early 30s. He's married with a child. I can talk about this more should the question come up, but this one, as you know, kind of hits a little close to home for me.
Yes.
But we're now in the midst of discussing him being able to go out on disability, and we've done the work and we know that he can do it. And we know that if he should have to take that step, which he unfortunately likely will, that he and his family will be financially supported because of that. So I would call it a great success, just one that doesn't necessarily excite me, but I do find it quite rewarding to know that ultimately, if he has to step away, that he will look back and say, I was able to do this because of the work we've been able to do for them. That's actually, to me, the greatest compliment that I can get, even more than somebody achieving their financial goals in retirement, is we often know that whatever plans we make, they can often be derailed, which is why we do so much defensive planning. And it's the derailing part and seeing that in advance and helping them prepare for it. And if that ever happens, capturing that, that to me, I find the most rewarding, just as in the times in my life that that type of thing has happened where we did not see it coming or the client chose not to address it, has been the most painful for me to see when it doesn't happen for some reason. So I spend a lot of time and energy working towards that.
Well, you know, you touched on a personal situation. And I don't know that you want to go there or not, but I think the situation in your own life that definitely one could look at as a setback, I think has caused you to use for good and has really given you a lot of conviction in what you do when it comes to making sure people are protecting their financial futures, not just envisioning a 3-year trip around the world, but making sure that if some of the more derailing events happen, that they're prepared for that. Open the door, and if you want to go there, we'll go there. If not, that's okay too.
I'm happy to take a moment. I think it's something worth sharing. It's not really about my story, but I've had the benefit over the years through MassMutual to have a number of advisors speak to us about their own personal experiences and their own personal challenges, and that does motivate me to feel comfortable speaking about it. I'll just mention it briefly. I'm going to be 55 in December. I fell ill when I was 40 years old. I had just moved to North Carolina, had not even opened up my practice here yet, which was interesting. So make a long story short, I had a disabling event. Frankly, because we're so hard-headed, even as advisors, even though I had disability insurance, I didn't consider myself disabled. I wasn't even planning on putting in a claim. I really felt that I could just, you know, work my way through it. And it was my father, Wisdom, said to me, how can you not put in a claim? If they're going to deny you, let them deny you, but put in the claim. And I did. I put in the claim. And they discussed it with me, and they concluded that it was a legitimate claim. And to make a long story short, I was able to collect disability. Now, I was able to work. And so I wasn't out on total disability. I was out on partial disability. But ultimately, that was the most important thing I ever did. That decision to put in a claim for disability saved me. It saved me and my family financially. I was 40. My wife was about the same age. My children were in first and third grade. I'm the sole income earner for my family. It would have been a disaster financially. I say that often. So through that disability policy that I had, which allowed me to actually work as best as I could while I was recovering and earn myself to the point where I was able to earn myself back off that policy off a few years, ultimately, that was the greatest advantage I've ever had. On a health level, it was a great advantage because it taught me how to take better care of myself, hopefully live a long, happy, healthy life from that point forward. From a professional perspective, it was an incredible advantage because I now, not only was I in this industry, but I actually, as we would say, I'm not just in the industry, I'm a client. And I was able to share that story and my conviction and to let people understand that their greatest asset is their ability to earn. And protecting that income is paramount to everybody's success. And unfortunately, that is a strategy that is not often put at the very front burner of what we do. And I have made it a life's goal to make sure that I do that because I've experienced it. I've had other people that I've seen in my professional world experience it, some that were protected and some that weren't. And I can assure you that it has given me the greatest advantage of anything that I've ever done in this industry. It's a hard road, but through a fair amount of introspection and even a little therapy, I've come to realize that it was probably the most important thing that's ever happened to me personally and in this industry, and has absolutely been a great factor in my success moving forward.
Well, and I appreciate you sharing it because, again, I think that, you know, we talk on this podcast about failure being a great teacher, and I wouldn't say the situation was a failure as much as it was failure of your good health, went to bad health, and you have since restored yourself. But you've used that as a catapult for good as opposed to not. I know, again, you've got a lot of conviction and passion that obviously comes through in our conversation. Where do you draw your inspiration from, Steve? Whether it's authors, speakers, coaches, where do you kind of tap into for your inspiration?
So that's a very interesting question. I think that comes from both sides. I am consistently inspired by my father. I'm also inspired by my mother, but in different ways. Sorry, Mom. I didn't mean to leave you out. But professionally, I am consistently inspired by my father. My father gave me my work ethic. And that ethic was you get up every day, you go to work, you do a good job, and you work as hard as you can. And he did that for 50 years as a carpet installer and then a carpet business owner, still installing. And sometimes I say to myself, when I'm in this industry, even on my worst days, I say, you know what? It's not like I'm laying carpet. It's a whole different world. And so that's given me a very strong work ethic and a very strong inspiration. As I've learned about coaching when I entered this industry, I certainly was early on inspired by the teachings of Dan Sullivan and Strategic Coach. That was very important to me early on. I've been inspired by a lot of coaches that I've worked with over the years, which would frankly include you. It would frankly include Jason Goldie, who continues to be a great coach to me. It would be David Cove, who worked with our firm. That was a great coach to me. It would be a coach and author, Scott Fithian, who unfortunately is no longer with us, but he is one of the ones that earlier on in my career helped me not just understand about financial planning, but also being able to how to express the quality of what you do to the quality of client that you're trying to build and ascertain. So there's been a number of authors. And frankly, even on the simplest note, I just mentioned my father inspired me. And my father gave me two of my first books when I was in financial services, which, believe it or not, were Sun Tzu's The Art of War and The Prince Machiavelli. Very basic, very going back way in the day. But frankly, even those are books that should be read. Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich is a book that everyone should read. And I also would say one other thing is that I'm also inspired by my children and my wife. I want to go home every day and have them be proud of me and have them look at me and say, this is someone that I want to aspire to. And I think to a point thus far, they look at that and they hopefully feel that way. So I'm inspired by generations on both sides.
Well, I've learned in life, and you really have affirmed it through your answer, in the sense that if you can be around people that inspire you, you will be an inspiring person.
Agreed. Agreed. Yeah. If you're in a room with a lot of people and they're inspired by you and you're not inspired by them, you're in the wrong room.
Yes. So it's a reciprocal relationship. And yeah. I often remind people, be careful who you associate with. And that gets back to the creation of culture, because inspiration breeds inspiration and spreads in a positive way. So the podcast focuses on culture. We talked about a lot of different topics that ultimately make you an inspiring person and a person that's built great culture in your client relationships and in your community. And not everyone that listens to this is in the financial services field. So what advice do you have for business owner, leader, maybe even an aspiring leader, as we kind of wrap up here today, Steve?
So, well, there's a few sides to that. First, I would say, get a coach. I mean, that is ultimately, coaching is so important. It's so hard to be so introspective that you can do everything on your own. You want people around you that have experience that can assist you from an outside perspective. Coaching to me has been paramount to my success, no matter what industry you're in. I would also say, be proud of your industry. Try and look within yourself and figure whatever it is that you're doing, how you're making a strong footprint on society, no matter what it is. Because I think that through that footprint on society and having the respect of what you do is also tremendously important, and it brings to your quality of work. Whatever profession you're in, if you can take a degree of respect into that with you, you'll do a very good job. And from that comes pride, and from that comes recommendations and introductions. And I finally think, ultimately, never stop moving forward. Never lose that work ethic. Have balance in your life with you and your family. Balance creates everything. An imbalanced life will never work out over the long term. But within that, the work ethic is so important. To know that it's that easy old saying that successful people become successful by doing the things that unsuccessful people refuse to do. Oddly enough, it's the simplest, most overused, and most honest phrase that exists in any industry. Right? Figure out how you separate yourself from the others. Use your work ethic to do that. And from that, with proper coaching around you, you'll be successful.
So be purposeful and passionate. Go the extra mile. In order to have a coach, you got to be coachable, meaning you're open, open to feedback and open to getting better, and have that consistent and ongoing drive to stay in action, moving forward, always becoming a better version of yourself. So,
as I said early on, I don't always word it as well as you. I take words from you all the time.
Well, I wanted to recap the wisdom of what you said there, because I think you're spot on, and really appreciate having you as a guest on the podcast today, Steve. Again, Winning Through Culture is all about helping people build powerful cultures, and that starts internally and helping them be successful leaders and begin to be a positive influence and inspiration on those around them. And that's really ultimately what does that. You are one of those people in my life. So it's certainly a privilege to be able to share some time with you today and let you tell your story, share your story, and knowing that someone listening to this will be getting some nuggets of wisdom through your hard work and efforts and propel themselves forward to make an impact on the people around them. So thank you for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Yet another episode of Winning Through Culture. Thank you again to Steve Krasnopol, our guest today. We look forward to seeing you on our next episode. Thank you.